Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton. You guys have questions for John, you know what to do. Text him in, 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, and we'll throw your question John's way before he leaves for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
So what is your feeling about the game tonight before we get into the Seahawks? I'm just wondering what you think is – I had one of the shows on in the background like I do every morning, so I always have a hard time nailing down who said what, but – they were talking about the Browns. They're going without Baker Mayfield. And they were talking about Stefanski. Is he going to make it through the season? Is he on the hot seat? I'm like, really? Is he already in trouble? Is that were they just creating content? Or is there some buzz that he might be in trouble?
No. It's just stupid stuff being said.
All right.
Because there's nothing to it. I mean, again, he was coach of the year last year.
Yeah.
He made the playoffs last year. Now he goes into tonight's game against Denver. He doesn't have his top two running backs, you know, because you've got Kareem Hunt on injured reserve, Nick Chubb's out. You know, Baker Mayfield's not going to be able to play, so you're going with Case Keenum as your quarterback. They may not have their starting tackles. I mean, they're injured. I mean, what? I mean, again, some people think that they're not thinking is what it is. I mean, it's like. I mean, Stefanski's the first one to get them to the playoffs in how many years? Mm-hmm. And so now, in the middle of his second year, you're going to fire him?
Well, that's why.
Give me a break.
That's why it caught my ear. I was, walking around doing stuff, and I didn't know if they were just creating a conversation. Like, hey, do you think he's going to be in trouble? I was like, really? Wow. Okay.
So, yeah. It's ridiculous.
Hmm. Pretty interesting. The AFC West, because Denver started off great. Now they did play. The Giants, the Jags, the Jets, but, and the Raider team coming out. I don't know if we even talked about this. That Raider team coming in and beating Denver, that was that was quite surprising. I wonder how big of underdogs they were coming in on that.
I think 4 or 5 point underdogs. Yeah. And, you can see right now the Broncos are a troubled team, because first off, if you go back to the Raider game, can you believe the Raider defense, as bad as it was last year, had 17 quarterback hits on Teddy Bridgewater to a point where he has a foot injury and he's expected to play, but again, he's not going to be 100%. He's not going to be able to scramble. He's missing 2/3 of his top wide receiving core because Jerry Jeudy is done. KJ Hamler he's out for the season. Jeudy will be back in another week or two. And then they've pretty much lost their entire linebacking core. They've got two linebackers that went on injured reserve for the season. A lot of their young backups are there.
Oh, they're out for the season?
What's that?
You said they went on IR for the rest of the season. They're out for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, Joey Jewell, this inside linebacker, is out for the season.
Yeah.
And then they lose Alexander Johnson for the season. He got a torn pec. So they've lost two linebackers for the season. Bradley Chubb hasn't, played a down this year. And so all you basically have Von Miller and a bunch of no-names.
Mm. John, what are your expectations as far as the running back rotation this Monday night? A lot of people asking, what do you expect from Penny? How many carries? First of all, do you even expect that he's going to be the number two guy? Or do you think, DJ Dallas or Travis Homer or the combo of those two will still have more of the workload than Penny would?
Well, I haven't seen the injury report yet, but what's it say about Malik? What about Alex Collins? Is he out?
He's supposed to practice today.
Yeah, so it's like he should be the backup because, again, it's not as
– Well, no, Collins would be the starter, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we're,
starter. Yeah.
So we're talking about – would Penny be the number two behind him, or would it be one of those other guys?
No, I think it would be Penny, but I think they'd mix in DJ Dallas and Travis Homer, because both guys have done such a good job. And, you're trying to get Rashad Penny up to speed because he hasn't done anything in the longest time. Now, again, I can see him when I, drive out of the complex here because he lives, about 15 houses away from me. So it looks like he's in good shape, and naturally, he's going to work hard. But I think they'll try to mix him in. But I mean, if Collins isn't the starting running back, something's wrong.
Yeah. So I'm just looking at today's injury report. Alex Collins did not practice.
Okay.
Mm. Groin. Gabe Jackson, resting veteran. Damian Lewis, shoulder. And that's why he left the other night, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And then Carlos Dunlap and Dwayne Brown both just resting.
Yeah.
So that's did not participate. Then limited practice participation. Brandon Schell, Cedric Oboihe, biceps, Brandon Schell and ankle. Mm-hmm. Sidney Jones, concussion still. Daryl Taylor, neck. What do we know about our rookie? We were just talking about Dwayne Eskridge. And, boy, that's
yeah,
it's starting to worry me, John, because, man, typically it clears up after a couple of days.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So should we be concerned about
yes.
him?
Yes,
possibly?
Very much. I think you have to be concerned. How can you not? Because, again, it's like he's missed so much time with the same thing. And, obviously, it hasn't gotten much better because he's still on the injury report with a concussion. So, yeah, I think you have to kind of start worrying about it. And, you know, and so that's, I think, a big problem because, again, he's talented. They need him. I mean, he could be the third receiver. But right now, that injury has lingered so long, you kind of wonder.
Yeah. Well, and I'm looking at New Orleans, and they had just a ton. What did they have, like eight guys that were eight starters?
Yeah.
We talked to Mike Triplett. Is that who
Tripp,
was?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. So anyway, but yeah, Deontay Harris, that's kind of a big one. Remember, John, he was the guy that returned the punt for a touchdown against the Seahawks in 2019. He caught a 72-yard bomb against the Washington football team. He's their leading wide receiver. He's out with a hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have any updates on some of the big names as far as – I know it looks like Eric McCoy, that's their center.
Right.
And Teron Armstead, those guys were limited. But, you know, they've had quite a few injuries there.
Yeah, because, again, they started the season. They were down 10 players from last year because of releases, suspensions, trades, you name it. And so they were really hurting. And so now this is the week they're going to get some guys back because I think, you know, Kwame Alexander was designated to possibly come back, and, you know, Marcus Davenport may be able to come back. So they may be able to get some of these people back, but they were down so much. And then you think about the idea at wide receiver, particularly you talk about Harris, they don't have much at wide receiver because basically their top three guys right now were guys who were undrafted. And I think what the most anybody of those three have caught is 15 passes. I mean, they've only caught 183 passes in five games, the total team. That's mm-hmm. it. I mean, so they're limiting Jameis Winston in his throwing. You know, and when you think about who's getting the ball through the air, it's Alvin Kamara, because maybe they're not throwing him as much as they usually do, but it's like he still gets a bunch of passes, and he's running the ball more, and he's great.
Yeah, well, and we were looking at Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
Sorry, Teddy Bridgewater. no, but, I mean, he was in one game 15 for 30, another game 11 for 22. I mean, his percentage is low, 60. And then, yeah, I mean, you're talking about the attempts being down. Yeah, it looks like they're trying to manage him. I wonder if that's just, you know, maybe they'll let him, they're just kind of slowly watching him, kind of tightening the reins for now, and then, you know, maybe later on. But he's got some long passes, mm-hmm, Jameis mm-hmm. Winston. I mean, he had the 72-yarder. Mm-hmm. There was a Hail Mary. He's had, like, I think it's like six throws over 40 yards. So, but, yeah, it's like they're kind of holding him back a little bit, it seems like.
Yeah, because I think the one thing that's so amazing, and so much is bloated by the Green Bay game, if you look at his touchdown to interception ratio, and you know how bad the interception ratio was down in Tampa, but he's got 12 touchdown passes and only three interceptions. That's good. But, of course, five of those touchdown passes came against the Green Bay Packers in a game nobody can understand because it looked like the Packers just went through the motions because it was 38-3, a 35-point win. But overall, I think that you can see he's doing enough to get the team to 3-2. He got the win in New England. Then he has a bad loss to the New York Giants, which should never happen. So they're up and down.
You guys have questions for John? Text them in, 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. It's powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. John, I saw this story. They were talking about, one of the producers who puts together some of the pieces for Real Sports with Brian Gumbel reached out. They said they did just a cold call. They did a story on Mark Davis, but they just called John Gruden out of the blue, just cold call, and they said he actually picked up. And the producer talked to him, said he's still in Vegas. He's letting the dust settle, but his quote was, "People know me know what I stand for 58 years. I've got a resume of 58 years. And then he said, the truth will come out. What truth? I mean, it's yeah. there in hard copy. It's in writing.
650,000 emails. So it's like, and he obviously didn't write every one of them, but we already know some of the ones he wrote, and they're terrible. It's like, what truth is there? Did somebody go over your shoulder and start writing these emails? It's like, hey, it's your email account.
Yeah, it seems just a weird response when you've got something that's in writing from your account versus he said, she said. It's like, no, it's hard copy. It's there. I'm not sure about the truth here.
Yeah, no, I just shake my head at that. It's like, it's like, hey, listen, I still like John Gruden. I did not like what he did for all these years in sending these emails. It's unprofessional. It's terrible. And, they dealt with it correctly.
I still think that him and Tirico were like the best Monday night group. All this other stuff aside, mm-hmm. I felt like he should have stayed there, but he went back into coaching. And I guess they gave him, what, $100 million?
Yeah, $10 million
a year. Yeah. Yeah. So where does Kamara rank for you, John? I just think he is – I love his effort. I love that he can both catch and run. I mean, he's got to be one of those guys. If I'm looking around the league, like I could take any running back mm-hmm. – I mean, Derrick Henry would definitely be tempting, but I feel like this guy is better than in this from the standpoint as far as a pass catcher.
Yeah, I mean, I think Derrick Henry obviously is the best because he's on pace now to back-to-back 2,000-yard seasons. But I put Kamara number two because, I mean, it's interesting because, in the past few years, he hasn't had the 1,000-yard seasons. But what he has been able to do is catch a lot of passes and do a lot of good things. Now they're running the ball more, so he's going to have over 1,000 yards easily. But I think right now he's the second-best back in football.
509 wants to know which team is in bigger trouble, the Jets, Giants, Eagles, or Washington? I did like the Joe Judge's comments about the what do you say, the fish rots from the head down or stinks from the head down or whatever.
I think it's the Giants. Yeah, because, I mean, you look at the Jets. I mean, they got Robert Saleh as the head coach, and, they're not a new coach. They're not going to fire him, and they're just going to give him more time and try to get him more talent. In Philadelphia, I mean, they weren't going to be that good anyways, because I'm not sold on Jalen Hurst. But also what you look at is they got Nick Sirianni out there as the coach, and he's in his first year, so he's safe. In the case of Joe Judge, I mean, what is this now, year three? He's 1-5. All of a sudden that defense that I know that we all talked about being so much better last year, particularly on the defensive line, is now the worst in football, or one of the worst in football. It's battling Washington to be the worst. And so it's like, I mean, here's Judge, the former Bill Belichick special teams coach. I have to think he's in trouble. And right now, unless Daniel Jones can bail him out, I think he could get fired.
All right, John, not super exciting, the Miami Dolphins, but it's kind of interesting to me. I mean, they're playing the Falcons 2-3. They're 1-5. I mean, this team was 10-6, and this was going to be the one good coach, Brian Flores, that came out of the Belichick system that actually had success because he's had trouble with that. And, with Tua, it's just very interesting what's going on down there. It sounds like things are pretty bad. And there was something about Tua and the quarterback. Were they going to start somebody different this week?
No.
Well, they were going after Watson, supposedly.
Yeah, they could have had it,
according to John McClain, the reporter out there, saying they could have a deal done as early as this week.
Yeah. So I think what it comes down to is that you can see Brian Flores and Chris Greer being the general manager, are desperate right now because they want to save their jobs. And it looks like, Tua isn't going to be good enough right now to bail them out. I know his record is 7-5, but a lot of those wins obviously came from last year. I mean, this is a team that lost to the Giants, for God's sake. And so it's like, and they lose to Jacksonville. So it's like, they are in deep trouble. And so what you have to see is that, they may want to get Watson, even if it's one where next year he has to be suspended with those 22 cases coming up, with the women and all that stuff. But, I think what they're thinking is if we can get Watson now, we can now have a chance to at least win some games, because say what you want about Watson, he's the fifth or sixth best quarterback in football, in most people's opinion.
How far down the rabbit hole is this Texans organization? How far away are they from turning it around, if you will. I'm just reading quotes from J.J. Watt talking about they're going to face off against him. And he said, it's not like I'm sitting here going, I can't wait to face this guy because it's not the same team. It's not the same organization that I remember and that I was a part of. And just talking about it's everything is different there. Do you think they're a few players away? Do you think they're a head coach and a GM away? How much of an overhaul does this organization need?
All of the above, because I think right now when you look at them, I look at them as being the worst run team, not in the NFL, but in sports. I mean, all they keep doing is making mistakes, losing talent. You know, like, for example, I mean, how about the fact that, Whitney Mercalis, they ended up cutting and taking a big cap hit on, and then they cut Andre Roberts, the wide receiver. You know, immediately both guys ended up with jobs. Mercalis ended up in Green Bay, and Andre Roberts ended up in with the Chargers. And it's like, and they keep giving away talent. You know, here they have, their left tackle. I mean, he's going to be out. He's on injured reserve. That's not good. So, no, I think that they're a long way away. And, of course, once you get rid of Deshaun Watson, what do you really have at quarterback? I mean, Tyrod Taylor, that's it. And Tyrod's hurt. So it's like, and I know that he went to Stanford, but again.
Oh, the kid from Stanford.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name.
Yeah, Davis Mills.
Davis Mills. There
yeah,
we go.
Yeah, so Davis Mills. And again, is that going to be good enough to do anything? I just think they're horrible, and they're going to be horrible for a long time unless they get, some different people in there making decisions.
They're going to be horrible for a long time.
Horrible for a long time. That's not a good outlook. John, we were talking earlier about, the whole thing with Penny. And, there was the rumors that, one side wanted Nick Chubb and then the coaches wanted this guy or whatever. You know, and as far as I know, I feel like Pete has final say, right, as far as that. What's it like around the league? Like, league-wide, is that typical or is it just very team-to-team as far as, when it comes down to it? Like, and I know with Schneider and Pete, like, it sounds like they don't disagree very much.
Right.
But in the case that the instance that you do, what would you say the mix is as far as, or just maybe just examples, like obviously Bill Belichick pretty much has full control because he's both, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, for most teams, like, in Vegas before Gruden, got fired and, he had Mike Mayock, how does that play out in most organizations?
Well, in most organizations, I mean, it's going to be the GM making the personnel decisions. Now, again, I mean, you look at the situation in Jacksonville with Urban Meyer, and of course he's got too much power, so he's got the final say. Then you look at when John Gruden was there, he had the final say. Belichick obviously has the final say. There's no doubt that Sean Payton has the final say. So I mean, you may have, and again, you can't think of too many more because most of these teams have already changed coaches or changed general managers, and so who's there long enough to be able to win and stay there? Like, it's certainly not the case with Matt LaFleur with the Green Bay Packers. I mean, he doesn't have full control. The general manager does. So in most cases, you may only have five or six, maybe seven at the most, that have the coach in charge.
Okay.
John, the 206 asking, hey, John, with the trade deadline coming up, who do you see the Seahawks going after?
Hard to tell. I mean, again, it's like you wonder if they want to add one more receiver. I mean, they want to add another cornerback. That could be. Obviously, it's not going to be anything on the defensive line. Maybe they want to add a linebacker. Although, again, them using so many seven defensive back fronts and things of that nature, going with, too many linebackers. Like, as I mentioned earlier in the week, Cody Barton only had two plays on Sunday, two, and he's a starting outside linebacker. So, and maybe look to get an addition on the offensive line.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Seven. Bobby's been on the field for 100% of the plays,
right?
Has he not?
Same as Jamal.
Okay. Well,
same as DJ Reed.
Yeah. What about Marquise Blair? What do you make of him? I feel like he is a guy that I remember his rookie year. They didn't play him. I guess they just didn't trust him. Last year, he started off great, gets hurt. And then this year, I don't know, you see him out there every once in a while. But, you see Ryan Neal out there. I wonder what the story is. Is he? And another guy I'll ask you about, Alton Robinson. I wonder if he's in the doghouse. He played early on and then you know, I think in the San Francisco game, he had some problems against the run. And I'm wondering if maybe those are two players that just kind of played their way out of good favor.
I don't know. I mean, I still wonder about Blair because remember he had that knee injury. Not that it was serious, but that may have held him back a little bit and make him, you know, a little less active on the field. That could be in the case of Alton Robinson. Again, I mean, they have so many different defensive end options, particularly now with Benson Mayoa back, that it's like, and then, you know, with Daryl Taylor likely to be back, I mean, it's hard sometimes just to be able to get on the field. So I still think they like Alton Robinson a lot.
John, we'll do it again tomorrow. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, the moment the texters have been waiting for. Cody Barton will join us for our player spotlight. It's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome in, everybody. Time for our player spotlight here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Always a pleasure to bring this man to the program. He joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is linebacker Cody Barton. Cody, how are you, man?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. We appreciate you taking the time, as always. I'm just curious. You're getting ready for a primetime game, the New Orleans Saints, coming up on Monday night. The season to this point, not what everybody was expecting or wanting. Give us a sense of the mood in that locker room and what some of the conversations are like heading into this game.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, the season's not going how we want it to go as of now, but, you know, there's a lot of season left, and so the energy around the team and in the locker room and just throughout the whole building, I guess, is, you know, it's still positive, and we understand there's still a lot of games left. We can still turn this thing around. I mean, we still have, what, 11 games left? So the story isn't written. At the very end, it'll be written, but, you know, everyone's so positive, upbeat, and energetic, and we understand, you know, if we all come together as a team and just start clicking, I mean, we could change this whole thing around.
Cody, you got it right, man. I don't know how many times I've said, no, it's 10 games. It's 16 game season. Sounds like you're pretty used to the 17-game schedule. You got that part down.
I tried to think about it, like 11, I think.
I know, yeah. I thought it was really interesting the way you answered a question. I just want to ask it again because it was during camp, and I think you were doing like a press conference outside, and somebody asked you, you know, that, you know, you plan to be a starter by now, right? And just, yeah, you know, kind of take us through that and the mentality, because, you know, I'm sure it's frustrating, and, you know, I think, and I'm sure you feel like you're good enough to be a starter in the league. Tell us just kind of that process and maybe some of the frustrations and some of the things that you've learned to deal with.
Yeah, I actually do remember that interview as well and that question. And like you said, you know, it is challenging. It's mostly mentally challenging. You know, it challenges your mental strength and your discipline, I guess, you know what I mean, to always keep that motivation, because I do see myself as a starter in that. And I've always seen myself as that, but that being said, no matter what situation, and you can't control other factors. All you can control is what you do and how you play and how you hold yourself, your attitude and all those things. And so definitely it is challenging mentally, but I feel like, you know, and this is just a thing I do. I feel like every morning I like to wake up and just I mentally reset myself, mm-hmm. you know, for a new day, just to attack the day. And so that keeps me disciplined. That keeps my energy up. That keeps my, you know, positivity and everything flowing, because it'd be easy to, if you started thinking about everything, you know, why aren't I playing, what this or that, and getting in your mind about it, you know, you could turn sour fast and your attitude would be bad and just negative energy and you know what I mean? And so
yeah.
For me, the way I approach it is I can only control what I can control.
Right.
And that's how hard I work, how I practice, how I play, how I handle the opportunities when it's given to me and all in those things, you know?
Yeah. Well, and do you ever like make the case for, you know, getting more time? I mean, do you ever talk to the coaches and, you know, and express some of the, you know, whatever frustrations you have or things like that? Do you ever have those conversations with your coaches?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have those conversations and, you know, we talk about things and, you know, no matter what I ask or what they say, you know, the specifics don't matter, but those conversations have been had, and And yeah.
Yeah. Well, and let me ask you, what do you think is your best game that you've had, like best performance? Because I did like a breakdown of you in the Carolina game a couple years ago. I felt like you could have had two interceptions in that game. One got knocked down. The other one, you know, the quarterback just threw it off target. But is that as far as your memory goes, your best game, do you think?
No, I'd say, this is only my third year. And so my rookie year, I was actually playing Sam, which, you know, I've never really played Sam before.
Uh-huh.
And so that was new to me as guys were getting injured then. I was thrust into the Sam position, but then last year, I think I only played like 1.5 games, and I'd say last year was my best game was with Minnesota, and it was like the only game I played fully, and I played like, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, you were attacking the line of scrimmage. You were coming downhill.
Yeah, and so I'd say last year Minnesota.
Yeah.
I think that's the one true game I've ever played in the NFL off the ball as an off-the-ball linebacker.
Yeah. Well, and tell us about, you know, can you play all three pretty much?
Yeah, I mean, I have played all three. I can play all three, but I love to be off the ball.
Okay. Yeah,
I love Mike the best, honestly. Mike's the best.
Yeah. That's what I've said too. I feel like you're a really good second level linebacker, and it feels pretty natural. What were some of the challenges of playing Sam up on the line of scrimmage? It's just a different view. It's just kind of, you know, the contact's closer. You know, what were some of the challenges?
Yeah, I mean, you know, setting the edge, just going against offensive tackles the whole game, just right there in your face. The read's very different. You know, it's actually a lot faster read. It's just right there, you know?
Yeah.
And then dropping from the line of scrimmage, too, is a little different. I mean, it's just, you're in a different spot of the field, so it's just different, you know?
Yeah. Hey, special teams, man. It seems like you, Belor, who am I missing? It seems like it's either you or him. You guys, I think you guys were second and third in the NFL last year in tackles.
We were.
Yeah. You guys have a little contest going there?
Always. And I think right now it's me, Belor, and DJ Dallas. We're all tied for number one in the NFL right now for tackles. But it's early, so I'll probably pull away with the most tackles.
Yeah.
But
I'll tell those guys that you're talking smack. Yeah.
Hey, you know, we do have competition with it.
That's
fun.
Good. Yeah. Well, and it seems like Nick is like the funniest dude in the world. He talked about the hit where his helmet came off and everybody saw his bald spot, he told us.
Yeah, that was I don't want to see that one in film again. That was hard to watch, his bald spot.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, I don't think I've ever seen a play where both helmets come off on a hit, but
and I'm laying on the ground dead.
Oh, is that right?
That was a fun game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you had a hit on that. Hey, were you trying to keep track? You're on the punt team, right?
Yes.
Tell us about that, the double punt, man. We were just talking to Tyler Ott about it, and just from your perspective, I mean, somebody was like, you know, I've never seen that before. Well, I don't think anybody's ever seen that before. What were you thinking? Take us through that play.
Yeah, I mean, I blocked my guy, got out, and then all of a sudden I hear a thud, and then I hear the whole crowd go, ooh, and that's, you know what I mean? When you hear that on punt, it's never good. So as soon as I heard that, I knew something bad must have happened. So I turned around, see the ball rolling, but I'm like 20 yards away at this point. So I start just sprinting towards the ball, and I just watch him. It was kind of cool. I just like, in behind everybody, get to watch it from, you know, almost like a back seat and just watch him pick it up and punt it off. And I'm like, can he do that? Yeah. Like, I didn't really know, you know, but it was cool. And then watching it in film too, him scooping up with one hand is, it was an athletic play, and just for him to kick it like that, that was cool.
Yeah, it was interesting, and yeah, it seemed like even like the guys on the broadcast, they always have like an official, you know, they have access to, and he didn't know the rule. I mean, nobody had ever seen it before. Pretty amazing.
No one ever seen that. Everyone was saying like, that's coming back. There's no way, and then they stayed with it.
Yep. Well, Cody, listen, best of luck, man. You know, playing great on special teams, and you got a great attitude, and just good luck the rest of the way, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
There you go. There's Cody Barton and our player spotlight today. Great to catch up with him. And Dave,
pretty sure Cody likes me best.
He probably does. He should. You're his biggest supporter out here. He wouldn't. People wouldn't hear his name if not for you. But, yeah, he's in surprisingly, the texters have taken it easy on you today on that. The funny thing about that play, the double punt and all that, you know, and you guys were just talking about it there. Everybody's going, I don't know what is that legal? Can you do it? Everybody, the players, even Dixon wasn't sure, you know, when we talked to him about it. Yet we get the texters like, of course, that's how it goes. How do you guys not know that? How do you not know that rule? I'm like, you didn't know that rule. Stop it. Nobody did. Pete, everybody, the officials were sitting there conferencing with each other like, well, what? So can you do that? What do we do? They call New York.
Just think, like, if somebody had texted that into Clayton or whatever, a show, I mean, you would say, of course you can't kick it again.
Yeah.
You think you could get it blocked. Plus, that's never going to happen. Guess what? And you know what? If it weren't for that scoop that Michael Dixon had, I mean, he's a pretty amazing athlete. I don't want to go too far on the punter, okay? But yeah. And then, you know, and the unfortunate thing for Cody is that, you know, his best position, and I agree with him, like he likes it the best, is
Mike
position, which is...
Who plays that?
Bobby. Mm. Bobby's not, you know, 100% of the snaps. I looked, and I think Clayton's off on the 7 defensive back.
I know, you've been sitting over there going through film the whole time.
Yeah, because then you'd have to have only 3 linemen, because Bobby played 100% of the time. So I don't know if he's maybe counting him as a defensive back. But, yeah, it's just kind of interesting the way things are going this year, and... I know later on we're gonna hear about Jamal Adams, but it's a weird year on defense. It really is.
It's a weird year across the board.
Yeah,
this team, man,
it really is.
All right, coming up, one NBA player channels his inner Dave Wyman. You're gonna hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
The Braves are one win away from the World Series, and in a large part because of Eddie Rosario, who last night had a chance for hitting for the cycle, but he did something a little better.
Here's a 1-1. Swing and a ball drilled right field. Going back is Souza near the wall, and that one is gone! Just over the wall and right, Eddie Rosario had a day. A 3-run homer, his 2nd home run of the game, and Atlanta blowing it open as they now lead it 9-2. It just got out into the Braves' bullpen in right field. Wow.
So what did he need?
He needed
a triple.
He needed
a
double, yeah.
It's always the triple.
He did a little better.
Anytime somebody's close, it's their triple. They got the homer, they got the single, the double. They just need the toughest, the most elusive of the bunch.
They don't like giving triples out. It's hard to get.
They don't hand those things out, Lefko.
No, they don't. Yeah, it's typically, you know, speed. I mean, there are certain guys, there's just no way they're going to get a triple.
Dan Wilson hit for the cycle.
How about that?
Catcher out there. I think he might have done it twice. I'll double check.
Was Dan, considered one of the faster catchers, do you think?
No. I think often when triples happen, you'll see a ball bounce around. It'll take a funny hop off a fielder's charging it one direction. It hits the wall and bounces the opposite direction. They end up chasing it around. You know, I think it might have been one of those situations. But no, I don't recall him being referred to as fleet of foot.
Yeah.
I don't think he was painfully slow, but I don't think anybody looked at him as he's for a catcher. He's a burner.
Yeah. He wasn't like Jesus Montero, though,
who ran like he was angry at the ground.
That was so painful to watch.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and I was like, man, just get your knees up.
Oh, everything about that guy was painful. Remember when they were toying with him at first base?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember being down in the dugout talking to Eric Wedge with a group of reporters, and they were doing fielding practice out there, and he was at first base, and Wedge is looking over our shoulders. He's sitting on the bench, and we're facing him, so our back is to the field. And somebody asked, hey, so how do you think Jesus is doing at first base lately? You know, I think he had a handful of games there. And you see Wedge kind of look over a reporter's shoulder. And just as we all look. And a ball, it's a perfect one-hopper. You know, you see every game a million times a game. And he tried to, snatch it and just completely whiffed. Went by him and he looked around like, where'd it go? Oh. And then Wedge goes, we're working on it. Yeah. We're working on it. Just the look on his face like, oh, jeez. I mean, it was painful to watch that guy.
I remember my memory of Eric Wedge. We did the show from home plate, and Jim asked him some question about, isn't it reasonable to, you know, see, the guy's a first rounder? And he looked at him, he goes, that's ridiculous. I was like, oh, dang.
Ooh,
all right.
Like that.
Sweeping the dial.
So this is not quite Dave fighting a bear, but the NBA season's underway, and Karl-Anthony Towns was asked about what he, I don't know, I guess he was asked about how he pumps himself up, and he had this answer for how he gets ready before a game.
For me, I've really just been watching two gorillas fight before every game. I've been addicted to that. I want to see what's the best in the nation.
Wow. YouTube video?
That's mine. I'm watching gorillas fight all day, because I know at the end of the day, if I'm the gorilla in that video, I'm leaving out alive.
He's watching gorilla fights on video on YouTube.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, I'm texting. Strange. I'm typing it in right now.
I didn't realize that was a thing, but I guess everything exists on YouTube.
Gorillas fighting.
Oh boy,
there we go.
I don't think I'd want to watch that.
That's what he. You know, you're a
big is it better than fighting a bear?
Well,
it's more evenly
two gorillas
matched.
Fighting. I mean, the most badass thing would be if a guy would, you know, were to beat up a bear. Which I could.
And as Dave says, there's got to be a wussy in the bear community.
Yeah, not every bear is, yeah.
Not every bear is tough and deadly, Lefko.
I remember Tom Nelson, he did the, you know, he does the outdoor line. And they were like, how would you refer to Wyman? And he called me bear poop. Like, that's what I would become.
Yeah.
I would become bear poop.
Oh, it's amazing how that just took off and it's lasted for years.
All because of, well, it was mostly you.
It's a great nickname, though.
Colin
Paisley.
Well, we had Tom on as an expert analyst on it, and then we had somebody from the zoo, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah.
they were giving us advice on, you know, you don't want to run up the tree. You know, we're like, well, yeah, I'd go up a tree. No, they can climb. You want to run downhill or something like that, right? Wasn't that it? They can't run downhill or there was,
yeah,
some,
there was something,
some weird.
There was a weakness. Yeah. That we went with. We went with it.
So funny.
Yeah, it was like Newman climbing a tree to go get a, yeah, like to get a fur coat out of the tree. I was just watching that Seinfeld episode the other day.
Sweeping the dial.
Speaking of the NBA, there's some drama going on in Philadelphia. And Eagles center Jason Kelsey was asked about Ben Simmons and the 76ers. He had a pretty good answer for it.
If I go out there and ball, if I go out there and play really good, nobody's going to have any choice but to love me or appreciate me as a player. You write your own narrative. You know, what's going on? I don't want to crush any other player. What's going on with the 76ers, Ben Simmons, stuff like that? All that is because of a lack of accountability, a lack of owning up to mistakes, and a lack of correcting things. If all that got corrected, if you're fixing free throws, if you're getting better as a player, none of this is happening. So everybody can f-ing complain about, you know, how tough this city is to play in. Just play better, man.
I like that it's just that simple. Well, just play better. Oh.
Sounds like he's chewing gum.
Yeah, he sounded like he was working a piece of gum, certainly.
And he's got like this big beard now, and he's got blonde hair.
Is his hair blonde?
I think so. Yeah, it's odd looking. But, man, I've never heard a guy like call a guy out in another sport that way. Have you?
Not that I've
Have you ever?
Not that immediately comes
no,
to mind.
No, especially in the same city. Like, well, all these teams are supposed to support each other. Maybe, like, cross-city basketball, football, but not same city, different sports.
I don't think he's going to upset anybody in that city by ripping on Ben Simmons. So, at this point, I think it's a universal feeling about this guy, which I don't quite understand exactly what's happening there with him. And I don't know who wants him. He makes a lot of money, but apparently he's got no confidence. He won't. He's lacking any aggressiveness at all because he can't shoot free throws. He's terrified of the free throw line, so he's not going to take it to the hoop. He can't shoot. I'm thinking, all right, well, so what? Tell me what he brings to the table here that I'm missing, and how is he now holding out or becoming a problem in practice, and he's being kicked out of practice. It just, I don't get it at all.
It's funny, Kelsey, he mentioned the free throws.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. That one drives me nuts. Now, I know that you're out there, you're tired, you're running up and down, so it's not like going in. But you and I were talking about this, remember, when you were a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wouldn't leave unless you got, you know, ten in a row. I mean, that you can work on over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, like for Shaq, I was always like, why don't you just put a hoop in your, like, living room? You could afford to have one in every room with a free throw line.
Yeah.
And just constantly, I mean, that's something that is the same. Like, there's no wind blowing. It's not like there's different guys in your way. It's not a shot from the floor. It's from the same place,
uncontested
every time.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's
that should be. You should be able to conquer that.
Yeah, at minimum, shouldn't it be just a requirement to be a 70% free throw shooter to be in the NBA?
Yes.
You have to at least be a 70% free throw shooter.
Because like you said, I mean, most kids can go in their backyard. And, you know, if you do it enough. I remember one time taking a lamp that was in my bedroom out and, you know, had an extension cord. And
oh, just to have light?
In my driveway so I could practice.
Yeah.
That's what he needs to be doing.
It's amazing how many of those guys at that level, just freak athletes that can jump out of the building and hit shots from the parking lot, but you put them 15 feet away from the basket with nobody checking them, nobody guarding them, Dave.
Yes, they do guard them.
And it's problematic. So there you go. All right. Coming up, the latest on the Kraken and Major League Baseball playoffs, John Morosi. He can do it all. He'll do it next with us. Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.